It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Thomas at 800-636-1067. Congratulations, you're going to win a pair of tickets to a show of your choosing. 2025 Wolf Trap season. Coming up this summer at Wolf Trap, James Taylor, Steve Winwood, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 in concert with the National Symphony Orchestra, so much more. You're getting to pick what your two tickets are to right now and all week long at 4 o'clock each and every day here on Grant and Danny.
That Grant and Danny Show? We're exclusively sponsored by the law firm of Condor and Mora. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
I want to get to our Beltway Blitz in just a second, but as we told you, the NFL league meetings are ongoing. There are some fun stories coming out of day one of the owners' meetings at the Breakers in West Palm Beach. Some of the headlines today. Browns owner Jimmy Haslam said that the Deshaun Watson deal was a gigantic swing and a miss. And he blames himself.
How about that?
I kind of wondered how he was going to handle this, but this to me seems like him saying, don't pin this one on our GM, who we really like, Andrew Berry. He's done a good job. We think he's successful. This is my fault, not his. So good for him for saying that, but it's also hilarious. Well, true.
I know, right?
Deshaun Watson's still on your roster, probably still going to start games for you. And you're already acknowledging this a huge loss.
Yeah, I mean, it's the elephant in the room, so good for him for owning up to it, in all sincerity. And I know it's not a popular thing to say now, especially given all the data, but I get it. I got the desperation. I felt the same desperation. They were in the Bears, Washington, you know, the Browns. They took a first-round quarterback, I think, like three times in 4 years at one point over the last decade plus.
You wanted
like,
Watson.
Yeah.
For whatever it cost.
He shouldn't be available. He is. I understand the baggage, but if he's eligible to play according to the league, let's do it. Thank goodness nobody listened to me and that was wrong. I mean, the whole point is I'm so desperate for one of these guys, a quarterback that can play, I'm willing to try anything at that stage. And so were they, and it blew up.
I think the lesson here is when someone's out of the league for a year, basically not playing,
yeah,
that needs to be taken really seriously at that position.
And then don't sign him to the worst contract in pro sports history also.
Big deal.
As a part of that.
Yeah. And look, guys come back from injuries all the time. It takes a little bit of time. See Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins this past year, whatever. But I think when a guy is, for reasons that are not health, not able to play for a full season and out of the league, probably means that they're starting over, essentially. There's another owner in the news today. The Jets owner, this is Woody Johnson. I thought this was hysterical. So he's just not a good owner. I mean, we could file the Jets into the circus category of teams that you were just referencing. Washington was in that for a long time. And it all comes back to ownership largely. Woody is the ringleader. But he ripped the NFLPA survey stuff today because the Jets got an F grade. I think they were the lowest rated team out of 32 for where do you want to work. And he said that this was bogus, that this is not a real thing, that he doesn't believe in the results. Mind you, it's his players being asked about it.
Yep.
It's not my take, having been in your building once for a joint practice or something. It's not the beat reporters take, Rich Samimi, who covers you every day. This is your players talking about travel and how you treat their family, and is there a lounge that their wife likes to have the kids at during the game, and do I feel like I have enough room at my locker? And he's saying that the results were completely bogus. Not really sure how that's the case. Here's what I do know, though. When you find out that the reason you've been doing things terribly, this reminds me of like John Taffer coming into your bar when you're about to be closed on.
Mm-hmm.
And John Taffer goes, dude, you got cockroaches in your kitchen. You're not getting any food out on time. Your bartender's drinking the drinks with the people. Like, let's not do this way. And you start blaming John Taffer or saying, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. You didn't see this. You came on a bad night. That's what this is. The owner is getting feedback. We know you're a bad owner. The results have been the results for a long, 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 long time. And now you've got the feedback to prove it, and you're going, I don't believe that.
I don't see it.
It's like the emperor being told he's not naked, man. He just can't handle the results.
Not our city. We're not used to that. Doesn't happen around here. I mean, it did forever. I mean, Woody Johnson's on that level of Snyder type stuff. Probably not as much harassment, allegedly, whatever I have to say, so nobody sues me from England. But you know what I mean? Like the level of incompetence, gross stupidity, isolated arrogance, where you couldn't hear negative news because you didn't believe it.
One more from the NFL and from the owners' meetings today. The Giants, and I don't know if this was Daboll or ownership, Mara, who said this, but they are not going to force a quarterback pick at 3. They've kept their options open. I think this is what you say one way or the other when you have the 3rd pick.
Mm-hmm.
And they now have 3 veteran QBs that have started games. Tommy DeVito probably never should have, but he did, and he actually beat Washington. Thank God, because it helped them get Jaden Daniels.
Thank you.
They've also signed Jameis Winston, who would be more interesting and fun to watch than their projected starter, Russell Wilson. But it's a wild quarterback room. They also have the 3rd pick. If Cam Ward and Shador Sanders don't go 1-2, Ward will almost certainly be gone to either Tennessee or Cleveland. But if those two guys aren't both taken and Shador Sanders is there, would you take Shador Sanders and cut Tommy DeVito, or would you just roll with your QBs and take the best non-quarterback in the class that you love the most, which could be either an elite edge or Travis Hunter, who could play both ways?
Yeah, now, assuming... Well, there's so many things that I would... It's okay. I need to clear the deck. I'm not having this coach that's about to be fired with a GM that's about to be fired doing anything, first of all. But assuming that those guys are there, they're going to take a quarterback if they do that the next group's going to inherit. I probably wouldn't let them do that. So if I'm having them there, I'm not going to set up this quarterback for failure. So I would probably not take a quarterback, if that makes any sense.
But you are the GM in this instance.
Yeah, if I am the GM, and I plan on being here.
You're speaking from Mara's perspective, which I think is true. I would tell them, you guys don't get to pick a quarterback.
Right, you've lost that privilege.
But if I'm telling them that, then I probably already should have fired him anyway.
And there you go. So let me clear the deck on that. So if, let's just say I'm Danny Shane. I'm taking the quarterback there, because I don't have a long-term answer, and until I do, everything's a waste of time. And that is my philosophy on everything. And if this one doesn't work, I'll be back here in a couple years, and I'll do it again. If you don't have one of these dudes, everything you do is a waste of time. So that's where I'm at. So I'll take Sanders and hope.
But I know that I'm going to be fired at the end of the year if I don't win. And drafting Shador Sanders to be...
Not going to help you a ton this
year. My number 2 or number 3 ain't the answer now. So I'll take Hunter, or I'll take the best defensive player on the board that I like the most, and I'll try to steal a win with those guys making a play or two, mm-hmm. probably. All right, let's get to our Beltway Blitz on the teams we care the most about in town. Spencer Nussbaum of the Washington Post joins us to get things started. Spencer, let's begin with the starting pitching through 3 games, 17 1/3 innings of 2-run ball. Mackenzie Gore still has the best start anybody's made in Major League Baseball to begin the season. Can't ask for a whole lot more through 3 games from the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, it's been unbelievable. And this is a point, like, coming into spring training and coming into the season, it's a lot of guys that you were kind of waffling on. You could go, oh, he might be great, or oh, he might take a step back. The fact that all three of the guys we've seen so far have taken a step forward is fantastic. And I mean, McKenzie in particular too, like if he's able to replicate that in Toronto, or maybe not even replicate it, but do 75% of what we saw, I mean, that is a massive development for the Nats.
What's going on with Dylan Cruz? Looks like he needs a map and a compass to figure it out at home plate there. A little lost.
Yeah, it's been a tough start, and it's a little odd to see just because, again, his spring didn't really suggest that this was coming. Again, he was, again, perfectly fine in the spring. Not bad, not amazing, but perfectly fine. Right now, you know, pitchers are just challenging him with fastballs inside and basically everything else away, and that seems to be a strategy that's working. Again, he's not a guy who's gone through prolonged struggles in his career, whether in college, in the minors, or up here. You know, it's a small sample so far, but I mean, 8 strikeouts in a row is not what you want to be looking at. So I'm kind of curious to see what he'll be working on in the cages in Toronto and finding out about that soon.
This bullpen was terrible in the first two games. I'm not saying it'll be that bad all year, but I also don't look at this bullpen and say, that's a good bullpen. They didn't really spend money, which is how you improve your bullpen generally. They don't really have proven commodities other than Finnegan, who's just okay, and they had kind of moved on from at one point this offseason. What do you think is the floor and the ceiling for this group?
Yeah, that's a really fair question, fair point. I think the floor is probably, honestly, a touch better than we're seeing now, just because I don't think a bullpen is going to have an ERA over 9. But I think that it could be rough. If you can't count on Poche, Sims, those two especially, to get you from the 6th and the 7th down into the later innings. And again, like Finnegan, like we saw, very good first half last year and a so-so to kind of disappointing second half. It could cost the Nationals a lot of games and make for, honestly, a pretty disappointing season if they're not able to get it together. That being said, I don't think all hope is lost. I think one of Poche or Sims is going to hit. I don't know who that's going to be yet. I still have a ton of faith in Ferrer. I think we're looking at maybe an all-star closer over the next, you know, 3 or 4 seasons. I think that he's got the stuff and command to get it together. Finnegan, I think, is going to be a decent, you know, closer. I think this is probably going to be one of the worst groups in baseball, but if we're talking ceiling, I think you can get it to a league average bullpen if maybe one or two of those fringe arms hit. But at the moment, it's looking more like 25th, 26th in baseball, unless they turn something around.
Spencer, you're a very influential person in this sort of baseball marketplace, and your voice carries a lot of weight. I need your help, okay? I would understand this if this was like a first, if this was the Dodgers or, you know, the Phillies, even Mets, Braves, a team that's going to win in the mid-90s games, and you had to platoon Luis Garcia just because each game is so precious and important. It's not as if he doesn't know which way to hold the bat against lefties. It's not that he hasn't been good, but for God's sakes, it's not some sort of tire fire disaster over the course of his career. What are we going to do this again? Where he just sits against every lefty, we're platooning him so that name that Rosario can get more at bats. Like, I know he had a good game the other day, but please, Spencer, use all of your influence. I need him to be an everyday player. Let him break out. Let him have the experience. What say you?
You, I, and a lot of people are on the same side on this. Look, in a vacuum and in a small sense, I do think that because of how Louis has hit Jesús Luzardo, I can see the first series of the season sitting him. However, if we get to whenever they face the Phillies again, I think it's late May or early May or whenever it is. If they're facing Luzardo again and he's sitting, that's a problem. He was their most consistent batter last year. I get, you know, potentially throwing off his mechanics if you're facing a lefty, but he's clearly figured something out at the plate, right? So I understand sitting him maybe 25% of the time against lefties, against absolute toughest guys, and occasionally giving him at-bats there. But if this is your everyday second baseman of the future, you kind of got to let him struggle through that, and you kind of got to let him work through it. So I get sitting him every now and then, but it can't be as consistent as it's been the past few years, and it really can't be what it's been so far.
Spencer, thanks for the info. We appreciate you.
No problem.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, let's talk Commanders. Nick Akridge of PFF. Nick, Adam Peters spoke today about still being draft first. That's his philosophy, even though this offseason was not that. And he said we were able to go out and get some really good players. Are you cool with that? Like that he can have his cake and eat it too here with him continuing to say we're about the draft, even though they're trading a lot of draft picks?
Yeah, I think so. I'm a huge fan of building up through the draft. What he's saying is kind of making me believe that they're not going to stick there at 29. Obviously, you have to have someone that's willing to trade up with you, but I think them trading back, getting some more draft picks would work out well for them. Obviously, you'll need to see how the board shakes out and who's available at 29. If they get somebody that falls to them that they like, they probably won't trade back. But yeah, I think really with him kind of going all out through free agency, I think he's really just kind of building up, you know, the foundation of this roster, which is something that's really lacked over the past 3 or 4 years, just with these kind of one-year deals, just build up the floor and just make the floor of this roster a lot better.
Yeah, I'm a salad-first guy, but I eat a lot of bagels and donuts, Nick. Let's go to this in terms of their free agency haul, trades, and otherwise. Kind of last year, it felt like, hey, we're plugging a lot of holes for a talent-devoid roster. What did that big theme of what they've done so far feel like to you here in offseason number two?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of what I touched on. Again, I think it is still building up that depth, building up that floor of what you had. Because, again, this roster, despite making the NFC Championship game last year, was still lacking a lot of talent in some pretty important positions. So I think, again, you are building up that floor of your team so that when guys have to step in, there's not that big of a drop-off. And then going to make some kind of big splash trades with Laremy Tunsil to get the star power that they were missing. And I think overall it's a really, I think is a very great way to kind of build your roster. I like what they're doing. I like these kind of one-year deals for some veteran guys. And then go out and draft some guys, and hopefully they can kind of pick up where those veterans left off.
If they stick and pick at 29, does it have to be an edge?
I think so. I think you're going to have a lot of options there at edge. Whether a guy like James Pierce kind of falls to you, who's a great pass rusher, but doesn't really have the size right now, I think they would stick with edge. Again, I just think there's going to be a lot of guys that can fall there. Maybe you have a nice wide receiver that falls there. But I do think edge is the move.
What's Luke McCaffrey going to be?
Anyone who follows me on Twitter knows I'm a big Luke McCaffrey fan. I think he was really unlucky last year. I watched a lot of him. He's consistently winning against man coverage, which you don't see a lot from rookies. He just didn't get the ball. Whether that was pressure got home to Jaden before he could see it, someone was open earlier in the progression. But he's winning against man coverage, so I still think there's a role for McCaffrey. I do think he could play outside. Like I said, he was still winning in man coverage outside. So, I'm a big Luke McCaffrey fan. I think he should be in some more reps.
Nick, are you expecting a breakthrough and a bit of a renaissance at cornerback from Marshon Lattimore, or are you worried?
Yeah, I'm a little worried. Lattimore's kind of been he's been up and down. Really, these past couple of years when he was with the Saints, he's not really that locked down that everyone kind of thinks that he is. But yet last year was pretty rough. There was not a lot of really great moments. And I'm kind of banking on all of that being him trying to push through an injury, come back early so that, he could be ready for a playoff run. But then that makes you think that he does have injury problems and he's constantly always feels like he's coming back from injury. So I am a little worried. I don't think they really gave up too much for it, but that's the guy that they want to kind of step in and be that lockdown corner for them. And I'm a little worried.
Nick, thank you, buddy. Have a great week.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. You too.
Nick Akridge of PFF. There are two rules that could be changing this week via the owners' meetings. Grant and Danny Flair too, because it's something that you've wanted for years.
Oh yeah.
And then the other one is something that I've been talking about for 4 or 5 seasons now. Let's get into those next on G&D right here on The Fan.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well,
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
You die, baby. Let them know. James Wood is goated. Do we have one that says, let McKenzie cook or something? Didn't he do that? Let McKenzie cook? Come on, Rouye. You got this thing.
What do I got?
You know. Watch it drop. Darius, crank it.
What am I supposed to be doing?
Listen to it drop. Nothing?
I mean, nothing.
Like a little bit?
Like just waiting for it to be over.
Just a little bit?
Couldn't be more out.
Nothing. Here's something you'll be in on. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Danny Hughey. I'm Grant Paulson. The removal of the automatic first down for defensive holding illegal contact.
Yeah. Here we go. Come on.
This has been your baby. You have nursed for years. You have been trying to get this baby to grow all the way into a real rule. How does a bill become a law? They need to make a cartoon version of that for you.
Grassroots campaign. I got my 20,000 signatures. Just knocking on the door. Hello, congressman.
Now, we don't know if it's going to pass, but it will be voted on here. And I think, Danny Rouye, you got a shot. And I hope you do.
There's a chance.
It's just so stupid. The third and the 21. I've got a sack on first and 10. It becomes second and 17. You get a five-yard penalty. It's second and 21. Then you get an incomplete pass, and on third and 21, an illegal contact, five-yard penalty bails you out away from the play. It makes no sense. Can't be an auto first. Make it a five-yard, 10-yard, whatever it is, penalty. But if that number of yards doesn't add up to more than what you need, you should not get a first down.
It has driven me crazy forever. So, of course, you get the naysayers who are like, get ready for some purposeful holding or get ready for some purposeful illegal contacts. You want to make it more punitive? have at it, Hoss. Let's call it a spot foul for legal contact, right? Let's say it's, as you said, because those are the cases that I care about. A 3rd and 7, I can understand a play might, the average pass play generates 6-7 yards, or the average drop back does, an average run does X, Y. Totally fine. Make it a spot foul. Whatever you want to do, that's fine. It's the 3rd and 21, just as you keep alluding to. A penalty that occurs at the 6-yard mark, you automatically give them the benefit of the doubt that the offense would do a thing that happens once or twice a game, a 20-plus yard strike. Wrong! No! It's the dumbest rule in principle. The automatic first down is insane. Anyone that likes it, rethink your life. Go into a dark room and stare at the darkness and contemplate yourself and come out when you're ready. No.
Is that an Aaron Rodgers joke?
No. You need time away to think. Mm. You got to contemplate your own more values and your own code. Make it so that it is a reason. If you want to make it a more punitive thing, where it's 7 yards, 10 yards, 12 yards, whatever you want to do, spot foul, I don't care. The automatic first down is stupid.
Well, it's more simple than that for me, respectfully, to my guy, Jorge. It's so easy. Do the penalty yards surpass the yards you need to gain? If the answer is no, you don't get a first down. Done. What can I solve next?
I got more time today.
Got any more brain busters? I mean, I am just checking things off the to-do list, right? Any more honeydews for me? How many yards did you need? Pick a number. Give me it, Danny. How many yards you need?
19.
19. How many yards was the penalty?
6.
Seems like you got 13 yards that you still need.
There you go.
See what I did there?
Perfect.
Little thing called math.
Good job by you.
Addition, subtraction, not even the hard stuff.
What are you saying, all sincerity, to the people that are going, well, then defense is just going to clutch and hold because it's more worth it?
First, I would say I don't think that's going to be as prevalent as you think it is.
I agree with that.
Number one. Number two, it happens in other sports. Like, that's a decision you've got to make. In hockey, you commit a penalty to save a goal sometimes. And you take your chances on the penalty kill or with a shootout opportunity against you or whatever. To that, I would say, okay, you just added some strategy, I guess. So what? I'll read this for you along those lines. This is from Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. He says that changing this rule will have unintended consequences. So he's going, he's driving the lane you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
For starters, the removal of the deterrence that comes from an automatic first down will make defensive holding and illegal contact more likely on 3rd and long. The greater the distance needed, the more likely the defense will strategically risk giving up 5 yards. It will become part of the coaching of defensive backs. When in doubt, grab the receiver. If it's 3rd and 15, it'll be 3rd and 10 if a flag is dropped. Okay. And then we do it again, by the way. And if they hold again, now it's 3rd and 5. And if they hold again, now it's a first down. Or guess what? They won't hold on 3rd and 10. People are coming at me as if this is some deal breaker. And when they're done talking, I go, yeah, you're right. To me, that what is lost by this? So he's saying on 3rd and 15, someone's going to purposefully hold the receiver. Okay, and then they've got to run another play. And then the defense has to get a stop still. What's changed? Except that
just the yardage, yeah.
Yeah, 5 yards closer. So what? He says that's the other unintended consequence. If removing the automatic first down causes a proliferation of illegal contact and or grabbing receivers before the ball is in the air and while the quarterback's in the pocket, they won't all be called. Officials won't want to bog the game down by repeatedly calling defensive holding and or illegal contact, even if it's happening. Agree or disagree?
So I do think that's a bit hyperbolic. In other words, you know, there'll be this epidemic of clutching and holding. I think it's every play. I mean, there's discerning and there's discretion that always has to happen, right? You could call a hold on every offensive drop back or every run play or whatever. And the inconsistency of the application always kind of drives us nuts as fans. I'd like to save it for when it's egregious most of the time, where think about a defensive end who's beaten the tackle around the edge and he's got the advantage of the guy has to reach back and grab him by the jersey or whatever to hold him up. You go, okay, call that one. I think Brian Arakpo tried to beat the Dallas Cowboys, right, in that one environment where they scored a touchdown, but no, they didn't because there was a hold, game over.
Do you know what game that was?
The home opener.
What Shanahan. Year?
God.
You got this. You're on it.
I don't. 2010?
Danny Hoo-Hey.
Somewhere in there? Here we go.
Week 1, 2010, Mike Shanahan's debut.
Yeah. So, part of the dude's story is, the worrying and the like, oh my God, is way overdrawn or way overwrought. for example. But again, that's why I always offer, if you want to make the penalty stiffer on a third and long, I don't want it to be worth it to you to just clutch and grab the receiver down the field, right? So make it a 10-yarder. Make it come up with some sort of other arbitrary thing, a spot foul or whatever. But the automatic first down, I keep coming back to the same thing. 5 should never equal 20. 5 should never equal 19. Boom. Ever, ever, ever in a billion years.
What about this? So we have pass interference. There is an illegal contact as well. What if there is a defensive holding, like you see on defensive linemen?
Mm-hmm.
There's never been a defensive holding called on a defensive back. But this is set aside for the obvious grabbing of a receiver in these situations, mm-hmm. and it's a longer penalty.
Yeah, all in, fine.
So pass interference is a spot foul, can be wherever down the field it happens, could be a 50-yard penalty, right? The illegal contact is a 5-yard penalty, which is within the play, I have decided that you illegally contacted that guy, but it wasn't egregious or ridiculous. And then there is what Mike Florio is worried about, which maybe he's got a point.
So hey, my counter to that, super quick, sorry, is imagine this. If you have one of those New York Giant or Tennessee Titan this past year possessions where you've already committed a penalty, a snap, you know, gets a shotgun snap gets thrown over your head, you have a tackle for loss, and it's 3rd and 31. Talking about coaching points for the defense, right? Well, here's my coaching point for my offensive players. We're going to run 4 verts. Every one of you find a defensive back and run into him. See if we can get illegal contact and start this thing anew. That 5 yards would be worth more than 30 to us.
Yes, but you know? I mean, they're not calling a ticky-tack ran into him thing.
You wouldn't think, but like that's my best shot. I have no offense at
sure.
this point.
But I just think you could have a defensive hold that you implement that is a 10-yard penalty if you wanted to do it that way. Or college's PI, as an example, is 15. If you really wanted to do it, it would have to be obvious that they grabbed him because they were trying to, you know, do this Mike Florio fear tactic of we're not going to give up the first down. You could do it 10 or 15 yards. I don't think it has to be 15, but it could be 10. And so 3rd and 21 becomes 3rd and 11. I'm meeting you in the middle if I need to, but I don't even think I need to.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty simple. If you need 20 yards and it's a 5-yard penalty, then you still need 15. And unless I do it 4 times, eventually we got to play football. And you're going to call a penalty on me, or I'm going to make a stop, or you're going to get a first down. But I just don't think it's going to be as big a problem as everybody makes it out to be. So that is the Danny Ruhier rule that you want changed that we have a chance to change.
I'm so happy. I hope it happens.
Here's mine. I've talked about this to you a lot over the years.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like it could be happening this week as well. There's going to be voting done on this. One of my pet peeves has been when a wild card team has to visit a terrible division champion in the playoffs when the division champion won a terrible division by default. Examples. Washington, with 7 wins, only won the NFC East because the Eagles basically were tanking and didn't beat them when they could have easily in Week 18 a couple of years ago, Ron Rivera's first season in mm-hmm. 2020. And so it was, I think it was the Giants at the time that would have won the division, oddly enough. And the Eagles basically said, we're not winning this game, put in Nate Sudfeld. So the Giants are watching the game from afar, and the Commanders end up coming back to beat them. But anyway, they got to host the Bucks, who are actually much better. You see this from time to time. I think the team with the better record should host the playoff game, period. Sometimes we've seen 12-win teams, 11-win teams go to 7-win teams.
Yeah.
It is a joke to me. Now, I know you're a huge proponent of the division championship mattering, and this is something coaches have talked about and harped on for years and years and years, as old as time, like talking about blocking and tackling. If we win our division, we get a home playoff game. And I'm saying you shouldn't just deserve it outright. If you accidentally win the division because the division sucks, not because you're good, but because the division is bad, and that happens once every few years.
Happens all the time.
I mean, Rivera twice. He did it in Carolina and here.
Every NFC South runner pretty much wins 9 games.
But,
yeah.
Look, and if it's 9-7 and the team's 10-6, you know, maybe it could get complicated wording-wise, mm-hmm. but maybe that doesn't have to be the case. But if you don't have a winning record and you're playing a playoff game at home as a division champion, you should not host it if the wild card team does. Like, word it however you want to, mm-hmm. but a 10-win wild card team should never travel to a 7-win division champion again. I'm out. So I love this. They're talking about it. It's been a long time coming. I kind of like the caveat, by the way, of like the 500 element, and now that we have an odd number of games.
Which I love, yeah.
For the moment, that's the case. Maybe it'll be 500 in the future. If we're playing 18, you have to win 9. But if you are under the threshold of 500, basically, you should not be hosting a playoff game against a team that won 2 or 3 more games, even if they're the wild card team. You're Mr. Division has to matter, regular season has to matter. Mm-hmm. Are you okay with this?
I am. So this is not one of the ones I'm fiery or passionate about. Like, I would change the fumble rule out of the end zone first. I would change a million things before I went to die on this hill. I'm generally like, I think there should be a reward for winning your division. I don't have a great case for it, but this is not one of the ones that I would take to court pro bono and try to, you know, argue in front of the Supreme Court to keep it. It's just how I've always felt. I love the idea that a division winner, because those things tend to ebb and flow. There are going to be years where the division's terrible. Then there'll be years where there's two great teams in the division. Two of the two NFC title game representatives came from the NFC East this year. There'll be a year where the NFC East is garbage. The NFC North was great this past year. Those sort of things should matter. These teams are beating each other up, and it kind of goes, as I said, it ebbs and flows. But I don't hate that. If you offer me, just kind of as a little compromise, a little meet in the middle, and as they said in Ocean's 12, an olive basket of... You can't have a losing record and host a playoff game? Okay, now we can talk about that.
Well, that one's real easy for me.
Right, that's simple for me. Like the division thing, like because as you said, if one team's 10-7 and the other team, the wildcard team, is 11-6, that's not that big a deal to me. That 11-6 team has to go on
the road.
I would
say the team with the better record should host the playoff game. And you could just stop and keep it really simple.
That, yeah.
And it's bad luck if it's 10-6 and 11-5 or whatever, but that's fine. If you have an identical record, the division champion gets to host. But what I'm saying is, that's like my, I like it, I love it, you cannot host a playoff game as a division champion if you are a losing team. You can't. I actually think that's embarrassing for the league. It looks like just a bad product. You know, it makes it look like an amateur hour spring league or something. And I'm a UFL guy. I watched the Defenders this weekend. They get their first big win of the season. But to me, it just looks less than the NFL when we start having 7-win playoff teams hosting games at home.
I get that. And it's happened enough times where you go, let's actually write something down where this doesn't happen again.
Oh, bro, an 8-9 team hosting playoff games, I'll bet you will happen twice in the next 5 years, 6 years. Like, this is a once every few years thing, I think, the way the league's all jumbled up now in the middle. Grant and Danny on the Fan. We'll get to Adam Peters at the top of the hour, the Commanders general manager, meeting with the media today, talking about why he made the trades, giving up the draft picks that he did. Next, we'll tell you where Washington is going to be practicing this summer. What team are they going to do joint work with? And some huge Caps news today. You're listening to the Fan. The NFL owners meetings are underway in West Palm Beach, Florida. We just got back from there. We'll have to tell JP about our different restaurants that we like to hit up. Send him to get some good eats. As we welcome you back on Grant and Danny on the Fan, we were talking about some possible rule changes in the NFL. Your one seed is to get the automatic first down and an illegal contact changed.
I would get the automatic first down just out of the lexicon of the NFL. A 3rd and 30, a personal foul. There should be no automatic first downs. Does the yardage go past the first down marker? Then let's dance. It's first down. To me, there'd be no such thing as an automatic first down.
I would do the exact same thing. I don't have nearly as big a problem with a personal foul or a roughing the passer or any of what are considered to be the most grave blunders being an automatic first down. But the 5-yard illegal contact, basically, I put my hand on your chest for a split second at 6 yards. And a referee sees it as serious, throws a flag, and I just cost my team the 27-yard third down that you needed to get. That one I can't abide. But I'm more excited possibly about the idea that I might never see a 7-win division champion hosting a 10 or 11-win wild card again. I think that's a long time coming. Nick's in Warrington wants to hop in on Grant and Danny. What's up, Nick?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey, buddy.
I couldn't agree more. And as Danny said, nowhere other than the NFL does 5 = 20. It's ridiculous. I'm even for, like you mentioned, a lot of the personal fouls. Remove the automatic first down. But look at a personal foul, for example, with the face mask. You get the 5-yard, and then if you want to change how it's called, if it's egregious, call it a personal foul holding and give them 15. But don't make it an automatic first down. If that's how you want to clarify it, that would work.
Yeah, and that's I love that. I mean, I like the example you had with the face mask, where it's not like we don't already occasionally ask the referees to be arbiters in that way anyway. Mm-hmm. Was it 5? Was it 15? It's not quite hockey.
Like, did he mean it? Was it 15?
You're looking at a guy's face. If there's blood, it's 4 minutes. If there's no blood, it's 2 minutes, which is still one of the funniest things
that is
in
incredible,
sports.
By the way.
I mean, it's just like, that's literally how they do
They're
it.
They're sitting in a room in Toronto going, what standard should we use? Right. The blood standard.
But, yeah, I think that's true. I'm looking at it. If it's quick contact, it's 5. If he's holding him to try to, you know, basically get one over on the rule, I can give him 10. And if it's pass interference, it's 15. I think you could divvy it up that way. One of the other developments coming out of the owners' meetings, though, Commanders-wise, got this nugget today. They're going to practice with the Patriots, barring league approval. I don't know why it wouldn't be approved. But New England and Washington want to link up. That could be fun. Drake May, Jaden Daniels practicing together this summer. They would then play in the preseason game in Foxborough. So that would be a road preseason game in New England, which, who cares? I mean, that's just, they're going to play somewhere, whether it's New England or somewhere else. I don't think people are overly interested in that on March 31st. But I am a sucker for the joint practices. I think you get a lot out of them.
All about them.
You're able to dictate and get to things that you might not in game. Short yardage, red zone, goal line. It's just a better way to prepare you. They obviously got a lot out of their work with the Jets this year. Dan Quinn said as much, and it looked like it thereafter. So could stay in the AFC East to be practicing with the Patriots, it looks like.
All about it. A young team on the rise with Mike Vrabel, by the way, who is is a hard ass. And you can imagine him having guys, giving max effort there in the August heat. But I'm all about it. I mean, to me, this was the wave of the future, 10, 15 years ago. Now, of course, everybody's caught up. But more work was being done there than in almost any of these preseason games. Bill Belichick was one of the guys on the forefront of it. I think it's so smart, so productive, it's so good. Because as you said, you could dictate so much of it. Instead of just hoping that a situation that you want to work on comes up in the game, you could say, we're now doing this period where we work on those things. And it's not just against your own guys who have to kind of give you the dummy look, right? If I declare, Grant and I, hey, you're on defense, I'm on offense. We're working third and shorts. Well, you know third and shorts are coming. You already know what some of the plays look like. You can't help, but you give me a good faith effort, but it's not the same. Your opponent doesn't know. It's another jersey. It's like that adrenaline that you can't fake, even in your own intense workouts. It's so welcome. It's so good. I love it.
The Patriots have had a good offseason. Not a great offseason.
Good.
They had a lot of money to spend, probably too much money, and they had to give out some contracts they might not love in the end. Like the Jan Mahimi situation. Someone's got to get this bag of money, you know? So like what they did with Stephon Diggs, I don't necessarily love, but I think he was the best available player at
Who's
the time.
Who's their Andrew Nicholson in that one?
Exactly. Mm. But on defense, I liked what they did a lot more, honestly, than on offense. On offense, they got Morgan Moses at right tackle, a little long in the tooth, gets banged up a bunch, but can still play a little bit. Garrett Bradbury at center, who's okay, former Viking, first-round pick at one point in time. And then Stephon Diggs coming off of an injury. They also brought in Mac Hollins in the receiver room. Remember Wes Schweitzer, the guard that was here?
Of course, yeah.
He signed with them this offseason to be some line depth as well. On defense, though, Milton Williams was their big-ticket item, who's a beast, the D-tackle from the Philadelphia Eagles. They also brought in Harold Landry as an edge rusher to get to the quarterback. They have not been able to rush the QB the last couple of years. Linebacker Robert Spillane, who's played with the Steelers and the Raiders, really good, just wrecking ball, tackling machine. And then Carlton Davis.
I got Carlton Davis.
Top DBs on the market, former Detroit Lion, came over. So that's, I would think, at least 4, if not 5 new starters on defense. Then some role guys like Kalavon Chaisson, Marcus Epps, Jack Gibbons. They did a lot more on defense than offense around Drake May. But I still think they had a solid offseason under Mike Vrabel. What's funny is that division now, Danny, when you look at the AFC East, how quickly this happened, it was like a year ago that there were 3 really good teams. Bills, Jets, Dolphins. Remember, everyone was picking the Jets to get to the Super Bowl. The Dolphins were this sneaky team that was the best offense in the league. It's now a one-horse race.
It is.
Everyone else has completely fallen off. Right now, it's the Bills at minus 250 to win the division. The Dolphins are like plus 550, depending on where you look. The Jets are 15-1. The Patriots are 7.5-1. The Bills are going to run away with the East, and we're a year removed from a 3-horse race, kind of even the way people saw it going into last year.
That's right. The Dolphins were the team on the rise, right? The Jets were a quarterback away for a couple different seasons. I mean, every metric said so. Then they got the quarterback, and then they were worse off somehow than they were before. Yeah, who knows what they did. So I was one of those idiots who thought that they would finally win the AFC East as Buffalo had taken a step back. Couldn't have been more wrong about that, of course, but you're right. you know, in New England, in this post-Brady Belichick era, has been searching for some sort of port in the storm. Now, all of a sudden, you look up, and it's not as bad a roster as it was a couple of years ago. It do be a sonar, because that was the worst roster in the sport, probably, for two straight seasons. Maybe more. I'd have to go back and look. But this now looks like a team in Mike Vrabel's image. It didn't take long, did it?
Hey, Adam Peters, how can you be draft first, but trade all your draft picks?
Hey,
something he was asked about today. We'll get to that next on Grant and Danny.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.